About Last Night is a podcast series that I have wanted to record for ages. Each episode, I talk to someone who excels in their field about the highs and lows of their creative journey and how and where they find joy in their lives. Some people have asked me about the name, why About Last Night? Simply because I meet my guests towards the end of the day and we chat over a drink or two. So this episode's guest is fashion designer Amanda Thompson. I suppose one of the most fascinating things about Amanda is that her creative journey actually began as a professional ballet dancer. In fact, she was one of the dancers in Michael Clark and Company. Amanda describes this as an intense, exciting period of her life. I remember a conversation we had when we first met, and she sort of said that because she was so young when she was a professional dancer, there were a lot of experiences she had that she didn't understand the enormity of until much later on. For instance, meeting Andy Warhol, dancing in a Vivian Westwood show, and being photographed by Nick Knight many times, most notably once for the front cover of ID magazine. Through her life as a dancer, the company were filmed a lot, and she became enthralled and deeply interested by the medium of film, which then led her to train as a professional actress, during which time she worked with creatives such as David Bailey, Ian Drury, and Billy Connolly, to name a few. Amanda describes this phase of her life as feast or famine, with financial struggles at the fore, something she is extremely frank about. And it was actually during this phase of her life she found her calling, which is how Amanda describes fashion design. She had no disposable income and spent years craving couture and luxury fashion, so was compelled to design and make her own clothes because she simply couldn't afford to buy them. Amanda is self-taught, which I feel is pretty amazing in itself, and she creates elegant, luxurious pieces in the most sumptuous fabrics. Amanda is a massive proponent of slow fashion and strongly feels that clothes should be things that are cherished rather than discarded, and this is really at the forefront of her business model. She runs her business from her relatively new shop in Westbourne Park behind Portobello Market in West London. Amanda is warm and funny, determined and strong, whilst being humble and self-deprecating, and like so many creatives, I feel she doesn't see her talent at all. Anyway, we met up in the summer at a lovely bar called Negozia Classica in Notting Hill, where we had a couple of glasses of delicious Italian wine and chatted about Amanda's journey to date, what inspires her, and her new autumn-winter collection. Here's our conversation. I am sitting here today with Amanda Thompson, so excited. You are a fashion designer. You have done several other things, which I'd like us to touch on.
Sounds well dodgy. No.
Not dodgy things. So why don't we kick off, Amanda, by you telling us all how you got into fashion design.
I was an actress, poor starving actress, no clothes, no money. I looked at the beautiful Oscar dresses, I looked at beautiful clothes, and I coveted and loved and just adored them, basically.
I feel that pull to really high luxury as well, and that sort of glamour and the elegance of clothes.
It is the elegance and it's the beauty. You know, there were, I think sometimes some of the red carpet dresses, not that I make anything like that, but I just think they're, like you said, they're elegant, they're beautiful, they're exquisite fabrics, and some of them are just magical.
It just cut in. The fabrics are just a core thread of your vision, really, as a designer.
Yes.
But so there's a big gap here, though. Yeah. You're an actress, which is interesting in itself, but how do you get to creating beautiful... I mean, they are beautiful.
Well, it was a process. It was a question of... I had no clothes, no money. I felt like rubbish. I had low self-esteem. I would go to, sounds terrible to say, I go to even cheap shops, which sounds awful. I feel awful saying cheap.
But we're saying low budget,
Primark shops. And I'd feel like a shoplifter because I felt that everybody knew I had nothing.
Okay.
So my self-esteem was on the floor, not because I didn't have. It wasn't that we didn't have any money as such, it's just that there was never enough for anything other than food on the
okay,
table.
So it wasn't like you had a disposable income, I just want to caveat this, you didn't go in and shoplift.
No, I didn't.
That was your perception.
It was my perception of how people felt about me, because I felt so... my self-esteem was... Because of acting, I think. Because of that path of wanting to be creative, having small opportunities of being creative, creating, enjoying it, flowing with it, going on the journey.
And pouring yourself into it.
And then suddenly it finishes, there's nothing, and then you have to wait for the next one. You'd wait for your agent to call to... you know, for a casting.
And, yes.
And by that time you're so nervous even when your agent calls, because you just feel like you're out of touch with creating, because there's no outlet.
That really resonates with me as a singer. And I think that is something that we do embrace as creatives.
Yeah.
But you obviously were at a place where your self-worth was really low, and you felt like maybe a bit beaten down by the process.
I felt beaten down. I think it's very similar to you, you know, where there were so many near misses.
Yes,
and
that's
hard. The closer it got, the further you fall. And I think I reached a point where I just had fallen a little bit too far.
Yes.
And I just needed a way out of it, I suppose. I needed another expression. And so I ended up going to Shepherd's Bush Market. I had £4, something ridiculous. And I went to Shepherd's Bush Fabric Market.
And when was this? How many years ago?
About 15 years
ago. Okay.
And bought some fabric and then made myself a pair of trousers. And they were, I mean, like, I didn't follow up.
I have an astounded look on my face. I often forget that this is kind of podcast, not TV. And I'm also eating lovely canapés while we're supping our wine. Okay, so I used to make clothes as a teenager.
Yes.
I've never made trousers.
Well, I kind of got a pair of trousers and I cut around them in a beige shape. And, you know, they were loose. I sewed them up on a machine. My mum bought me a sewing machine for my 21st birthday. Mm-hmm. And so I always had a sewing machine. So I stitched them up, I stuck a zip in them, and they probably looked awful, but I went, ooh, love my trousers, I got new trousers, and it suddenly lifted me. And then every other weekend I'd go and see my mum and dad, and we'd go for the weekend, but I'd spend all day of Saturday and Sunday in a little room on her sewing machine, going through her fabrics, you know, and just making skirts and making. I became obsessed.
So that's quite interesting, because I think that is quite a prevalent characteristic in a creative, that obsession, because if you feel a connection to something, you feel you have to be immersed in it.
Yeah.
And you obviously, and I mean this in a really positive way, you're that way to the nth degree. So there's still a little bit of a gap. From the trousers, which I'm sure were delightful.
No, they weren't. So then probably about 2 or 3 years later, 2 years later, maybe around that, I was working in an antique market, and friends and the lovely lady that I was working with said, oh, would you make me a trouser suit, or would you make me a dress? And so I started making things for other people. And never thought about it in any other way than it was just nice to make things.
And had you told people? Did you say, this is what I'm doing now? Or
no, it was just I'd wear something and somebody would say, oh, I love that. Where'd you get that from? And I go, oh, I made it. so then it kind of grew from that. And then...
So at this stage, were you making patterns or using patterns?
Another friend said, why don't you, who was a really good sewer, she said, why don't you buy patterns and... you know, follow a pattern, because you'll learn so much. And I thought, what a good idea.
So, don't go off-road, Amanda.
Because you're wasting money on that fabric.
Well.
And wasting all that beautiful fabric. Oh my God, I wasted so much beautiful fabric. You know,
but I suppose learning, that's the process of learning. Your fabrics are sumptuous and the colours are vibrant. Everything is bold and punchy, but also graceful. Mm. And I want to say fragile, just because you use the softest, finest silks and things like that. So there's a real juxtaposition there. So what I find really hard is that you're bold in that respect by immersing yourself into this creative process. but your self-worth, you were struggling with your self-worth, and you are, you know, for someone that was an actress and is now a designer, you're quite, you don't crave the limelight, do you know what I mean, in that way?
No, I mean, it's kind of a double-edged sword, because part of you does, because I love, because it's part of the creative process of working and immersing, you know, when you're acting, you're in it.
Yes.
So it's not about look at me.
I always say that as a singer, for me, I want to connect and I want to communicate and I want you to feel something.
Yes, exactly.
And I suppose when you're an actress and now with your clothes, you want them to resonate with people.
Oh, I do, totally.
Yes. So, okay, so you were making clothes for other people.
Other people. And then an opportunity came about where another friend at the antique market said, oh my God, I'm doing a Christmas fair and I'm organising this Christmas fair and there's one stand available because somebody's dropped out. And from the back of me somewhere, I went, I'll have it. And where did that happen? What am I going to do? What am I going to sell? You know? And so I thought, God, shit, what have I said?
Then you thought, oh, I better make some things then.
I better make some things. So I started making things, and then I did a weekend's fair, set it all up, and I think in that one day I made like £250, and that to me was such a huge amount of money.
And how many people, so that was your first collection?
That was,
kind of
random. It was pieces and remnants of fabric, like interesting fabrics, and you know, it was very early stages. But anyway, so that then took me in a direction, because then I met this other guy through doing the fairs who then said, I want to do a women's wear collection. I like what you're doing and I'm doing handbags at the moment. He didn't have a clue, I didn't have a clue, and I went, same thing, from me, from somewhere, went, oh yeah, I can do that. And I thought, I can't do it at all. Why am I saying
but
that?
But I think those moments are wonderful. That's your inner voice.
Well, I didn't say I could do that. I just thought, oh, what an interesting, maybe I should try that. Maybe, you know, so I thought about it and then I thought, go on, what have you got to lose? You've just got to do it. It's either going to work or it's not going to work.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I made some clothes and he then took me to China because he was Chinese.
Oh, wow.
We had them made in China. We came back. I mean, they weren't patterns because I didn't know how to make patterns. I literally made the clothes, handed them over to a factory. The factory worked out the patterns. They made things. We bought them back and then we sold them in, he had a stand at Pure, there's a
I know Pure
in London.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So, and we sold in Pure, and it was I think in that one little season, my dresses, I could be wrong, so I think we made about £8,000, and I thought,
wow,
that's amazing.
Yeah.
And that was wholesale. And so I thought, that's really interesting. And at that time, I wasn't getting any money. You know, it was all because it was a test for me, it was a test for him.
Yeah, yeah. So
and
it's like a good faith thing, which we all do,
we do
in a creative world.
And so, and I didn't know. And so that's part of the experience and the journey. And so then I said to him, look, is there any chance you could just pay me £100 a week or something, just so I can eat, survive a little bit, you know? I'm not asking for much, I know there isn't much, but just to kind
in
of,
case.
You know, just in case,
yes.
So I don't starve.
Yes.
And he said, no, I'm sorry, I can't. And so I thought to myself, okay, I can pay myself nothing and do this
for myself.
And why will I give you all of this when you're not prepared
giving me anything
to,
back? Yeah. Wow, that was...
So that was why I started. So it's thank you to him.
Yes.
There was no offence and no hard feelings. It was just, it's like, no, that's not right, you know.
Your first shop, if I'm right, was in Bermondsey.
It was, yes.
And how many years ago was that?
10, I first started.
Wow. Wow. So after this sort of, let's call it the Chinese venture.
Okay, the Chinese venture. I then put a collection together and a lovely, beautiful friend said, look, I'm going to help you. I'm going to lend you money so that you can put your collection together and
amazing.
Start your business. It wasn't it? She was like an angel.
Yeah, fairy godmother.
It was like my surrogate mother in many ways. She was a lovely, lovely lady. So I then... I basically bought all the fabrics, put the collection together, took a stand at Pure again, because
yes, because you kind of knew it.
I kind of knew it, and I had a sense of it, and then took on orders. So the first season of doing it, I think I only took one order. But it was enough to kind of keep me going. The second season, no, three orders. And then okay. The second season, it was five orders. And then the third season, so this is a year and a half in, it'd gone up to seven orders. And this was the beginning of 2008.
Okay.
So the beginning of the recession. So it was all going in the right direction.
Yes, yeah.
And this was all wholesale. So it's a very different thing to what I was doing now. I found myself in a position where I hadn't taken enough of a deposit on the pieces, because I wasn't really a businesswoman. Just kind of learning.
And that must be a whole different thing that you have to learn.
So I was trying to pull it together to make it work. And then one particular shop placed an order for, I think it was like £15,000 or £20,000 worth of clothes. It was a big order, really big order. But at the last minute, once everything was made, they cancelled their order because of the recession. So I was left owing money, having all these clothes, not being able to do anything. So that's when I realised that it was the end of my business. And we'd just moved to Bermondsey, London Bridge.
Yes.
And when we first moved there, I mean, we'd be there a year, but when we first moved there, I always said, oh, if ever I have a shop, it'll be down this street. And back then, you know, there was nothing.
No.
And I remember the first time I walked down, I tingled, and there really was a shop there.
And you knew.
And I thought, and at that time, I was still an actress. It was still what I did and still what I loved. But I tingled and thought, oh, if I did, you know.
It would be here, that one over there.
How funny. And then here I was, a year and a half, maybe 2 years later, in a position where I had to go, right, this is the end of my business. Life is saying it's not going to work. So I closed the door slowly within my mind. I took my little dog, Lily, for a walk. And as we walked up the street, I looked up and it said, "To let." Outside my
On Bermondsey Street. Oh my lord!
And I went, oh my god.
I've got to do it!
I don't know how, but I've got to do it! I've got the clothes!
Yes. The universe has given me a different time!
Yeah. I've closed that door, so now it's open that one!
Absolutely. Well, I remember when, in one of our conversations, you saying to me, so I want to just put it in context for all the listeners. So, you've mentioned that you're an actress, and before that, you were a professional ballet dancer. So this is what I find really interesting about your journey, is that you've basically walked three creative paths. Mm. However, I remember very clearly you saying to me that fashion design was always your calling. And it's almost like you went through those professions to get here.
Yeah, I feel that.
So why? Because it must bring you. So I know you know that this is all about where and how you find joy in your creative process and journey.
I think.
Why does it bring you joy then? Why was it your calling?
People. I think firstly because I love fabric. I love fabric so much. I know it sounds so stupid, but when I first started, not way back when, but when I, you know, just as I started my business on my own, I'd wake up in the middle of the night and I would dream a dress and I'd have to run to my little room and, you know, pick up the fabric and drape it, you know, while it was in my mind, you know, like 3 o'clock in the morning, because I loved it so much.
But I think that's why, in part, you and I connect. Now, I love fabric too.
Yes.
But I don't think I could do what you do, but I'm really hoping I get an invitation to come to Italy with you to look at fabric. So it is the fabric, it's the love for the fabric.
I think it's also the thing, it's not about me. And I had an amazing acting teacher who's sadly no longer with us, and she always said, your work should surprise you. Every time you do something, you should be surprised.
How wonderful.
Because it means that you're living in the moment, truly. And as much as I did within the work, I never had the courage to go, oh my god, that surprised me, look at that, we did this, we did that. I could never do that because it was too personal.
Right.
It was about me.
Yes.
And it felt wrong. And then when I would, or, and now when I pick up fabric and I place it on the mannequin and I'll drape away, I can stand back and go, oh my God, that's so beautiful.
Okay.
And I get that. That was when I got what that meant, because to me, it's not about me.
No.
The surprise is what the fabric does. It's out there, it's over there, and it's, you know, it's just, that's why it's my calling.
So I've had many moments when I've been recording these podcasts when I really wish people could see my guest's face, because the way you were talking about the fabric and the surprise and draping it, your eyes just totally lit up. So I think from the way you're talking about fashion design, it's pretty obvious, but can you verbalise how it brings you joy?
My customers bring me joy. I find that so rewarding. There's a lot of rejection.
I understand that, yeah.
In dance, in acting, and that was the path I chose, you know, but it's a tough, tough path, and I think that's also part of the, as much as you're not meant to take it on board, it's always personal, and eventually it does get to you.
Yes.
And I think the day I made something, and the day I opened my shop and somebody came in and they bought someone, they went, oh thank you, oh my God, I love that, thank you so much, I thought, somebody just said thank you to me. Wow.
And there is immense joy in that.
So much joy.
I find it interesting. So something you just said just triggered something in my brain. It's interesting how when you do have a creative profession, how much rejection, or as you said earlier, near misses you have to deal with. And what's really funny is I remember as a singer everyone going, you can't pay any attention to what people say. What's really weird is this creative pool is made up of all these people who should be thick-skinned but aren't. We're all, our skin is paper thin a lot of the time. It's so interesting.
And tell that's me our gold as well, you know, or, you know, that,
it
that's
is.
Why there's the magic. The,
well, I think the fragility and the vulnerability is what allows us to do what we do. It's that weird contrast.
Yeah.
Tell me about your gorgeous shop now, because so you really have to go, everybody. I looked at Amanda's stuff before we met, and I remember thinking, it's quite tailorish. It is timeless, which I adore, but there's something on your website, correct me if I'm wrong, it's something about sort of tomboy elegance.
Yeah, tomboy chic.
Yeah. And I was thinking, well, that's okay, because I'm not remotely a tomboy. So I'm not going to be spending any money in that shop. Every time I walk in and I get invited into the back room and I get to look at the rolls of amazing fabric, it's just mesmerising, really. Tell me about this shop. So you moved from Bermondsey.
Moved from Bermondsey. I've only been in this shop for 2 months or something, but I have to say, I love it.
It's got a good energy, hasn't it?
I think the shop loves us.
Yes, I agree.
I really do. I'm very independent, I'm very small, I love the community, I love the village feel, I love all the people around, and the shop is just, it's beautiful, it's small, but it's beautiful.
No, it's stunning.
You have the beautiful big windows at the front, the beautiful big windows at the back, which eventually we'll see when
we No, I think it's gorgeous, and as you say,
I love it.
I'm a great believer in energy, and there is a lovely energy there. Talk to me a little bit about the key elements of your brand. So for me, and I know you'll say this is right, because obviously I'm a fashionista.
always right.
Well, I have a massive passion for fashion, and it's definitely courses through my veins. But your fabrics, you never skimp on your fabrics. You buy such high quality premium fabrics, and you are led by pattern.
I think it's simple cuts. What I do is pretty simple. But it is about the fabric. The fabric has to have quality. I love colour. I probably don't wear that much colour myself in a funny way, but I love colour. I love boldness.
And pattern. You work a lot with pattern, don't you?
At the moment, I have done. And especially this collection, it's really eclectic. I mean, super eclectic. It's just like, where has that come from? So I kind of like it. Well, this particular collection, I have gone to Italy and went to one particular mill and pretty much got most of my fabrics from there, because they are the most fantastic mill, and they have such an enormous collection of beautiful fabrics. I mean, it was, I went there for the day, and it was that whole thing of walking in being, but it's like being given the key to London. You can
pull
out as many as you want and we'll help you. And and they just left me alone, just to pull out fabrics, pull them together, sit them alongside each other, discard them, go, oh no, can I have that one back actually?
Yeah, it
was amazing. And also I get overwhelmed, you know, because you suddenly then kind of go, oh my god, am I doing the right thing? There's so much, there's so many, how do I pull it together?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. So if that's the seed of the inspiration, the fabrics, do you see a fabric and go, oh my lord, I could make a jumpsuit in that, I could do that in that, this is definitely, I can do a blouse? Or
I kind of have a vague idea when I see them, but born out of their textures and things like that, and then you pull them all together, and then I find myself walking away from it all, and then when you start working with them, they go off in different directions.
Right.
So there was, and also once I came back from Italy, I then went through samples and swatches that I had, and I realised that some of the fabrics I didn't want, and some of them I wanted to add to.
So, yes, the fabric, the colour, the luxurious
texture.
Feel. Yeah.
Love texture.
Yeah, the texture. And I'm not over-egging the pudding when I say your silks are just silky, sort of silky soft, that's not the right word. What's another? I mean, they're just...
They're like water.
Yes, because I want to say buttery, but buttery infers a thicker fabric, but your silks are really fine.
Some of them are fine.
Really fine. Mm.
And then the lovely velvet, the silk velvet. Oh my god, this collection, we have the most beautiful Devore.
Incredible. Yes, it's quite exciting.
Colour and pattern.
Panthers on it.
No, beautiful.
So let's just wind back to that strap line that I saw on your website.
Tomboy chic.
Mm. So you say what you do simple. It doesn't look simple to me. There are a lot of tailored pieces.
Yeah.
Is that where the tomboyness comes from?
I think it's trousers. I make so many trousers. And I love that kind of androgyny with clothes.
Yes.
I love a boy cut trouser, or I love that trouser which a man could wear, but a woman wears it so much better.
Yes, we all
know that
this.
Kind of thing.
Yes,
I suppose my collections are more lent towards trousers.
Is the joy for a fashion designer, especially when you make your sort of very elegant high end pieces, that even though you've got an essence in mind, you actually want to appeal to as many people as possible? Because, you know, if I was going to be very frank, you're very tall, willowy, and kind of slim. Well, you're kind of more, whereas I'm short and curvy, but your clothes work on both of us.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
I guess I don't necessarily go, I want my clothes to appeal to every single person. Of course, in the great scheme of things, that'd be amazing. But I know that's not what life is.
No.
If I like it, there must be someone else out there who likes it too.
But don't you think? Thank you very much.
I'd hope there was more, but you know.
Thank you.
Thank you.
But don't you think that's a really important part? You have to use your own kind of compass.
You have to love it.
Yeah, you do.
You have to love it when you make it. And then you go through a process of seeing it so much that you end up not being able to
see
it.
You have to step away.
I work with, I have a lovely, I was going to say lovely, he is a lovely friend, Dowitz, who helps me. He's a top sample machinist. He's absolutely brilliant.
Wow.
And he teaches as well. And I've learned so much from him in the past. And he knows me so well, and when we make things together, he always hides them in the cupboard because he knows that if I look at it, I'll hate it.
It's like an overload.
It's overload. No, I hate it. I'll suddenly go, oh my god, that's so boring. Oh, I wish I could be amazing, and I'm not.
You are definitely not mediocre, and I'm hoping that people are realizing how, by listening to our conversation, how committed and so in the moment you are. I think that's what exudes through your pieces, and that's what I love. Most creatives, I think, because they do literally pour themselves into whatever they're doing, find it quite hard to balance their personal and professional life. How do you find that balance? And when things get really hard, how do you find your joy? How do you tune into your joy?
Well, I think that's the thing, is that my joy is what I do. I love what I do. But I also never want to hate what I do. So I think there has to be a work-life balance. And I reached a point about 4 or 5 years ago where I had to make that choice of saying, yes, right, at 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock, you close the shop. And yes, you have a day off, because I was beginning to drown in my work, and it was becoming a chore rather than a joy.
Okay.
And so I'm quite strict about it now. So I set my hours, you know. So I get in at like 9:30. I'll leave at 7:30, 8 in the evening, you know, on a normal day.
Yes, so you have time to pour happiness into other things.
Absolutely. I think that life outside of what you do is so important. And to be and spend time with the people you love.
Of course.
Because it all feeds in.
Of course.
It makes us who we are.
Do you think that boundaries are quite hard to set as a creative?
I think they were to start with, because the obsession was there and you just had so much to prove. But then I think they are. You are always in it, as much as you're not, and as much as you know, but you're always seeing something going, oh, that's interesting, I could do that. Or you see something in some obscure,
somewhere,
building, and you go, oh, that's interesting.
Yes,
everything inspires.
Absolutely, and how wonderful is that? What are the biggest highs to date in your joyful creative journey?
Oh, it's so difficult. You've asked me this before, and I think I said there to come. I've had so many in so many, you know, in all my different lives, as, you know, I'm like a cat. They've all given me a high, which is why I've been able to move on with no regret and no bitterness. I nostalgically wave her back and go, oh, what if I hadn't have given up? What if I, you know, where would I have been? Where would I have gone? You know,
yes.
But that wasn't how I felt when I moved on. It was instinctive with all of it. And even with acting, I never gave up. I never drew a line and said, that's it, I'm never acting again. It was more one took over the other. And it was a seamless,
organic
moment. Or that, you know, as far as I know, it's still happening, you know, it all feeds us.
I feel this shop is a high.
The shop is a high. I love the shop. It's a new moment.
Yeah.
I've had a year out from my old shop to this shop, and getting the shop and having that year out made me realise how much I love having a shop.
Yes.
Not just because I love having a workshop. I love having my space where people are invited to come in.
What about the lows? The lows I'm feeling are like when you literally felt like your self-worth was...
Oh, that was a big low.
But that kind of propelled you, didn't it?
I'm a survivor.
You are.
I'm a real survivor. And I think that actually when I'm at my lowest, I probably find myself the most.
I'm exactly the same.
I know who I am and I know how to get out of it. And I kind of, it's easier for me to go, I'll take the brunt of it because I know I can handle it. I don't know why, but I'm sure I can somehow.
That's so interesting. I would always say that I don't know how I'm going to get out of it, but I know I will get out of it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Maybe. Any other lows or?
No, I've had lows in my life. I think everybody does. You know,
we've
had moments. I had moments as a dancer when I was not well, and you know, but that was part of unhappiness. I think when we're unhappy or, but it's always hard. And like we just said, you know, we have to survive.
Absolutely.
And that does make us who we are. You know, it makes us stronger.
When you said earlier, it's not about you. I think what's really interesting is there are so many core threads of you in your collection, and I can see it as I get to know you better, because there is a fragility and a sensitivity, but it is up against a resilience and a strength. With that beautiful timeless quality that kind of runs through it, which I think encapsulates you.
And I think a determination to be honest to myself whatever that is, you know. I mean, I'll make something, and if it doesn't, like you with writing, and you know, you kind of reach a point, if it doesn't ring true,
yeah, it's got to go.
You kind of go, I don't want it. It's not gonna, it doesn't do it for me. Yes, it's lovely. Yes, it's beautiful, but it's not right. It's not. There's something missing.
I think that quest for authenticity is the most important thing. Yeah. So we can enjoy our wine, but before we go, Amanda, please could you define joy for you in 3 words? You knew this was coming.
I did. I forgot. Damn. Well, Lily.
Lily.
My beautiful little sausage dog.
Yes, for all of you that don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so your greatest joy is Lily.
Obviously my work and what I do.
Absolutely.
And my love, Martin.
Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you.
I have really, really appreciated this.
Oh, thank you so much.